time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you're listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Now, the great outdoors this week, Redmond, for anyone in the northern states, particularly Queensland, holy hell, there's been some rain.
There has. G'day, good morning, everyone. It's been crazy. Watch some of the footage on social media of people driving jet skis around the front of their house and their main street to help and save people and whatnot is incredible to see. Like, not in a good way, but it's, I don't want to know the money, I guess, that's going to come to try and repair everything that's been destroyed, Pat. It's sickening.
It's provided some of the most incredible images throughout the week. Lismore under meters and meters of water. And then there's been reports, Redmond, of certain Brisbane golf courses being inundated with bull sharks. Now, we've done a little bit of research because there was a tweet that went viral around the Carbrook Golf Club Brisbane that's seen six bull sharks that have been stranded in the lake at the 14th hole after recent flooding. Now, we did some research, Redmond, and it was actually the 96 floods where apparently these sharks were stranded there, and apparently there's up to 12 now. Well, but that takes a, you know, it gives it new meaning to stay out of the water when you're next taking your tee shot.
Well, I don't plan to go in and get my ball. That's where it'll end up, Pat. But it's funny enough you say that because I was I'm up in Burmese as we're doing the show here live in Burmese. I just want to apologise to anyone because I'm in a house full of clowns. Let's just put it that way. So if there is some racket or I'm getting destroyed at some point of this conversation, it is going to happen. And the fax man, as we like to call it up here, Robbie Hargraves, who I'm up here with, I actually showed him that photo that you sent through of the bull sharks. And I didn't actually do the research. You did. And Robbie goes, yes. Oh, they've been there for years, mate. They reckon they're going to get out now. So, of course. So if you want a bull shark, head down to the 14th hole and you'll be able to get yourself one of those. But I'm gonna take us to somewhere else quickly, Pat. And this is, it's actually in Burmese or right around the world. Now, tell me if I'm wrong here. I put on the
probably
the coffee discussion. Now, this is pretty intense up here. I think it's getting me angry thinking about this. Coffee, it's the biggest pain in the backside. I'm not a massive coffee drinker at all. You're not huge. I don't do like a coffee. But I'm going to kill the boys up here and these coffees before we do everything. It's coffee, coffee, coffee. I don't understand it.
I like how we've gone from devastating Queensland floods. You've got the war in the Ukraine at the moment between Russia and Ukraine, and your biggest concern at the moment is the fact that the boys are keen to have a coffee before going out. I can relate to that. I like a coffee before going out.
This is serious as well. This is a serious discussion because there's going to be a war here the way it's going, because it's literally, we go fuel up, righto, boys, fuel up. You go to pay for the fuel, and as you're paying for the fuel, oh, hold on, boys, we're still waiting for the coffee. 10 minutes later, they're caught, like, yeah, that 10 minutes is hurting me. That's time on the water. We're waking up in the morning. We had a day off during the week. And the first thing they do is get up. Oh, let's go down the main street. Let's go grab a coffee.
You're not happy.
It's not good. It's really not. It's actually disgusting. I'm not happy with it.
Let's get to some forward drive news before we get stuck into the fishing and the report from Bermagui, because it's going to be great to talk through the week that's been for you around the approach to chasing these beautiful marlin and of course the catcher. But LDV, which is a manufacturer based out of China, it's a Chinese brand, but they're gearing up to launch an all-electric ute at the moment in New Zealand. But if it hits New Zealand, there's no doubt it will hit Australia, or we think there's a strong possibility of it. But it would be the country's first EV ute if it does, in fact, hit Australian shores. Now, why is this important? Well, we're an outdoor show, and utes are a critical part of enjoying the outdoors, Redmond. But we've seen over the last little while, we've seen Ford's Lightning, their EV version of their 150s. We've seen the Tesla Cybertruck, which has been delayed after delay after delay. We still don't know when there's a legitimate landing spot for that, which will obviously be in the US market first. We've seen the launch of Rivian, which was enormous, and we've seen their stock prices fall significantly since their first launch. And they will hit Australian shores at some stage, but it is still, suffice to say, a few years away. So there's every chance that this Chinese manufacturer may be the first to land on Australian shores. And the information that various sort of, whether it be Cars Guide Drive, 4x4 Australia, et cetera, are releasing in terms of information is that it'll be powered by a single rear axle mounted magnet synchronous motor. Now, I don't know what that means, Aaron, but paired with an 88.5 kilowatt battery, it has a driving range of 325 Ks. Mm. Now, when you see that, and at the moment, to fill up a car, I think it's about $1,500 for 50 litres.
I learned the hard way this last week, trust me.
Does that interest you, do you think? Do you think not there's a spot for that in the Australian market, a 325K range ute?
Not even in the slightest. You know my theories on these, Patrick. You don't need to get me started. I'd be very impressed if we see a car in our lifetime, and I know you say it will happen, that can pull your 750 hardtop from my place to Burnley.
You sound like Scott Morrison.
Well, that's because he must be a really good bloke then, that bloke. I don't know who it is, but it's not going. Well, that's 325K driving. That's not towing. So what do you get? 120 towing a 750 North Bank. So
well, it's a good question. Well, they're yet to release data on tow ranges and that sort of thing. But you don't
You and I, after this show, we could get sacked from a coffee discussion. But the time that we've done this, the time that we've done this show, it could be next week, it could be in 10 years' time, it could be in 25 years' time. We will not announce a car that can tow your 750 North Bank from Ocean Grove to Bermagui. And if it can, I'm not stopping 344 times to charge the battery. It won't happen.
I feel like I'm talking to someone from Fox in the States. It's like it's Laura Ingraham or Tucker Carlson or bloody Sean Hannity.
Reality man. The reality man's here.
It's not reality. The reality is these are the ute manufacturers. And the Lightning's a great example from Ford. They've already proved their tow rating. But this one will hit Australian shores sooner rather than later. And, yes, it may not be able to tow your 750, but you don't need it to have a range of 800 Ks if you can drive it to work and back each day and then you simply plug it in. So you just get into the routine of plugging it in each day once you get home from work.
Pat, I need to tow to work every day and it's not going to do that for me. So it's not going to happen.
Not everything is about you. The world doesn't revolve just about you. This is your daily driver for plenty of tradies out there. But you just plug it in. You can plug it in at the worksite, mate.
So you like this?
Well, I like the fact that there's competition. Would I buy one? No, I would wait until there's a larger volume of manufacturers that have.
So it gets better and better and better.
Well, the technology, yeah, as the competition heats up. But the quicker this gets to town, then the quicker other mainstream manufacturers will start to head in this direction and really hopefully view the Australian market as a great opportunity, because we've seen the launch of Ford's Everest this week, releasing their new 2023 Everest, a 3-litre V6 diesel, 3.5-tonne towing. Looks incredible. Mm. You know, we'll be able to tow the vast majority of you know, sort of 7-metre and below boats. Like, that's really exciting for the Australian marketplace. I think the more we see new technology hitting Australian shores, then the greater opportunity and choice the consumer has.
You nailed it on the head, though, straight away, what you said before. Like, straight away, it comes into what you said was the way I look at it. I just go naturally, all right, is it going to be able to tow? Like, I don't know. Just as someone that fishes, it's just straight away into your head. Can it tow this? Can it tow this? But you do have your average punter. You forget about the brickies and whatnot are going out to work with their utes that actually don't have to pay for fuel, like you said. So it is important, that factor, which I never, even until you said it, I didn't actually think about it, because I'm naturally just going bang.
Okay. Well, you add into that the competition around warranty. Yeah. Kia offers like 7-year warranties on their vehicles. Like, it's extraordinary. So you can change over your cars every 5, knowing that you're selling to someone that's still got 2 years of warranty. It's going to, you know, the resale is going to be pretty reasonable because of that fact. Like, the competition is great for consumers. We're just, at the moment, the sheer struggle with being able to get stockings a nightmare. But once that starts to, the chip shortage globally reduces, we're going to have so many wonderful options as touring vehicles as Australians. It's going to be terrific to see. Now, Redmond, you have been gallivanting up and down Bermagui all week. Let's go back to the start. You towed the boat up in a converted 200 series Land Cruiser.
Yep.
Towing 4.5 ton because you've got, obviously, you've got all the boys in the cast. You'd be close to probably hitting 4 ton on the way up. How'd it tow? And
come on,
talk
Robbie,
us through your week.
Big fella's not that big. He's close, but he's not that big fella. Well, we're actually trying to get home, but we're all trying to wait for our pace to come in to be able to afford to get back with the fuel prices at the moment. So waiting for payday to get home. So it's we've had a fantastic trip, and yeah, you are spot on with the car, the Land Cruiser. It's an absolute weapon. It's Jake from Geelong Marine World was kind enough to lend the big truck to us so we could tow your boat up here safely and have insurance cover us and whatnot, because if something goes wrong, there's a lot of money behind us and what we're sitting in, so we don't want to just destroy that, as well as do the right thing for our own safety, because that car there is pretty much as safe as it gets towing that big 750 North Bank. You do know what's up. I was going to say, you don't know what's on there, but you definitely know what's on there. But it pulls it like no other, up the hills, getting through here. There's not many cars, I don't think, that can pull it like that. So I was very impressed with the car. It's done well. But once again, Pat, the cost to come to this car, to get this car to tow this boat, it's not cheap. And like, you're looking at Bermagui. Like, we drove in the other day and we were a bit 7 o'clock start, and in a line, there was like GMC, the Silverado, whatever it's called.
Yes, yeah.
You've got Land Cruisers, like in a lot, and like these cars are $200,000, give or take, either side. Some of these, like they're all done up like massively to tow these big boats. So along with the big boat, you've got to be able to, like the big car, the cost of it too is very, very expensive. So it's it does add up a hell of a lot. And once you go into those bigger boats too, Pat, like yours, using a little bit more fuel, but we're going to do a review on the fuel soon, so we won't get into that on the boat side of it, Pat, because that's pretty interesting how much fuel we didn't use. It was very impressed with the Mercs, which we will talk about. So we towed it up, took us roughly 10 hours, give or take. I think we got the 7 o'clock ferry, trying to avoid that Melbourne traffic. We didn't want to drive through Melbourne with your big boat peak hour.
Yeah.
We tried to avoid that. Jumping on the ferry, it feels like it takes an hour off the trip by the time the boys have their coffee on the boat, so we can get on the other side. We punched down here, a couple of stops, food stops. We got some accommodation when in nothing fancy. It's just a house. It's, I think, cost us $1,000 for the week. It's on Scenic Drive, Bermagui. If you do want a fishing house, it's a cracker. I thought $1,000 between the 6 or 7 of us was quite cheap. Then fishing's a hard bit. Now it's just the weather. Like, we just, the rain that we've had all week, it actually wasn't as bad as what they predicted, but it's just been wet. Wind has been kind to us, but not great. So we've worked very hard. The fishing hasn't been great. It was really good the week leading up, as we spoke about on the show multiple times, Pat. And I thought we were going to be in for a red hot session, like 5 to 10 fish a day. We've just been managed to get 1 fish, 2 fish, 4 fish we've seen, like things like that. It's been really, really fun though, chasing the whole time. The boys love it, leading the fish up, seeing them in the water, seeing them tailing. Then all of a sudden, you just be driving and you look to your left and there's just a free jumping marlin just scooting out of the water everywhere. So it's definitely a trip of a lifetime. I've got a tip coming up a bit later on, but I advise to do it with a group of friends. Now, not just on your boat, but I guess if you can get, say, 2, 3, 4, 5 boats up here, you all go down to the pub, you can have a beer. When you're on the water, you can help find fish easier. And you can sort of like make it into a bit of a competition between the little group and have a bit of fun. So the marlin fishing's been not good, but good enough. The dolphin fishing, the fishing off the fads, as well as the traps. Any traps out there you can find are holding so many dolphin fish. They're going really hot. And one thing I want to talk about is just the radio talk. Oh my God, there are some absolute idiots on the radio. Oh, like the radio's there to communicate it's not there to talk about what time you go into the pub with your mates, then who, like, it's not a place to have a full conversation with Bob and John. And some people think it's their phone and they're just talking. Like, you're generally there to communicate, to help each other. Like, say, for example, you're in your boat, I'm in mine.
And the fact that anyone else can hear this is not one way and only two months communicating.
This is on the repeater out of Bermagui. They've got a repeater. So it's running from the top of bloody the southeast New South Wales to the right down to the bottom of the southeast coast. Like, it's the whole corner just getting this talk on the radio. And, oh, there's some idiots on there that just say some, like, I just don't get what goes through. I guess 10 hours on the water, an adult male can really turn into a three-year-old child very quickly. But it's the chat on the radio is crazy. But what I wanted to go back to, Pat, was radio talk. The radio's there more for have a laugh and whatnot between if you have something happen. But it's more there for communication. So if you hook up, the fish is
purposeful coming, communication.
Yeah, if you're there, fish is tracking towards that boat. You don't want Bob trying to tell his mate to order that palmy for him at 6 p.m. because he's going to be 10 minutes late. Like, send him a text. Like, when you're trying to get a fish, you worked all day to catch a fish, and you're trying to talk on the radio because a fish is going towards a boat. Hey, mate, guy in the Haynes, can you please move over? Can you push up? Like, where fish is heading your way, and everyone's great on that aspect of it. Yeah, mate, get out of your way. Sorry, apologies. Yep, get out of there. And everyone's being great like that. But the rubbish talk on there is incredible. Like, I wish we recorded some of it. But yeah, all in all, it's been a great trip. This year, been a bit on the pricier side. Like I said, towing the big boat, the fuel being expensive, as well as we usually camp and we stayed in the house. So it's been pricey, but when you've got six or seven people, it's actually not too bad. So yeah, it's been an absolute cracker of a trip, and we'll keep doing it every year. And it's one that I'm going to try and get you up here for as soon as you retire, which is in about, hopefully, 5 or 6 more years, Patrick, if I'm pushing an extra 2.
We've got a huge show coming your way this morning. We're chatting with Lee Rayner and talking about his new highly modified Stacer Crossfire 481. It's an absolute weapon. They're normally a side console configuration. This thing's a center console, and it means business. It is phenomenal. After the break, Aaron's going to whip around the country and we'll find out what's biting in your part of the world. You're listening to Real Adventures.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Redmond, take us around the country.
Batesman's Bay to Eden, Pat. That marlin fishing has been good. Not great, but good. Good enough to get down there and chase them, because they could turn on any day where you're going to have big, big sessions. Bait ball. We're coming into bait ball's time of the year. We're going in March, April, where it can seriously be some of the best marlin fishing in the world on the southeast coast of New South Wales. You've got some snapper, dolphin fishing, the sharks, Pat. The sharks right along the southeast coast. We're literally marking that many sharks down deep, like 800 metres. You drop a bait down on a sinker to them, bang, you're on. Mako, it's bloody sensational. I posted up some stuff during the week of Mako, literally hooked it in 800 metres. We might drop the sinker down and back up to it. You can see the sinker going down on the Garmin, down, 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 down.
Mako,
I say to the boys, right, he's all over it. You can see the Mako come up to the bait, come up to it. Then all of a sudden he starts jumping to the back of the boat 0.3 of a second later. He's from 18. Incredible. Anyway, land-based bream in the port hacking on prawns at night, really good. If you want to chase and do something a bit different other than the striped marlin, especially when they shut down on the inside of the shelf a bit, push over the edge, big blues as well. And Port Stephens is going pretty well for big blues at the moment. South Australia. Yep, 1-2 fishing charters. We spoke around them a few weeks ago, but they're once again in and amongst the tuna, getting their bag limits to their captures pretty much every single week. Tumby Bay, beautiful part of the world. Whiting are going great offshore, fishing around the islands there. And if you're land-based, traveling through the jetty, some really good squid fishing. Queensland, completely flooded out. We won't go into Queensland this week. We'll save that for next week. There's other more important things going on there at the moment. WA, big dolphin fish off the Fads, Pat. Like, big dolphin fish, big bulls. Some smaller ones as well, but some really, really quality fish. Fishing out of Perth on Jazz Fishing Charters, the kingfish, up to 15 kilo.
Really good models, Redmond.
Literally big fish, as well as some good snapper on the charter boat there. So give Jazz Fishing Charters a call if you want to get amongst that. Tasmania. The Craigieburn has been producing some really, really good rainbows, and bottom fishing outside of Anson's Bay Bar has been flooded. The best eating fish in the sea, if you ask me. Not a massive fish eater.
And there's a good catch in Hobart as well, Redmond. I think it's 27,000 seats and $750 million worth.
Oh, you knew something was going on, didn't you, about this thing with Super Bowl a few weeks ago?
I reckon we're moving very the show. Cheeky,
I reckon, mate. I reckon you knew this was coming and you didn't announce it on Real Adventures a few weeks
Surf,
ago.
Surf, fishing. Tassie, one of the few places you can go and catch a rainbow trout or a brown trout and then go fish offshore and catch it.
You go to Tasmania, I'm going to Exmouth because I like warmth and Tassie's freezing. So anyway, that's the whip round for the week, Pat. So it's been, like I said, marlin fishing up here. If you do want to get amongst that southeast coast, New South Wales, it's fantastic fun up here.
Don't forget, always wear a life jacket. Don't risk your life. It is the one thing that can save you if your boat does end up over Redmond. There's plenty of different styles of life jackets suitable for any water sport activities for any age. A simple search of lifejacketwearit.com.au will help you find an appropriate life jacket for anyone, whether you're racing offshore, the Blue Water Classic like Redmond is at the moment, chasing big billfish off Bermagui, or you're heading out in your mate's tinny for a day's fishing. lifejacketwearit.com.au for information on your life jackets and what's appropriate for your style of fishing or boating. It's now time for the social club. We don't have too many because we're pushing it. We've got a few guests coming our way this morning, Redmond. But make sure you're joining the conversation. Send in your questions to our socials, our Real Adventures socials on Instagram, Facebook, or better yet, download our Real Adventures app. To fire us away, Redmond, what have you got for us?
It's from Sam. Hey, boys, what's the best way to drop anchor on the whiting? It's a good question, Patrick. It's something that I see people
doing regularly. We talk about this often, yeah.
Yeah, it's not hard, but it's about doing things right. Now, people will often say, oh, you got to sneak up on the whiting and make sure you don't drive over where you're fishing or whatnot. I literally drive up to where I'm fishing, try and find the sand hole, get up ahead of it, say by 25 meters, fall back 10 meters roughly, and have the sand hole so you're casting 10 meters behind the boat. The maths work out there. That's pretty much what you got to do. So you want to get the sand hole right behind the boat so you're casting into it. But actually specifically about dropping the anchor, you don't need to drive up to it and all of a sudden put your boat in 100 mile an hour reverse and throw your boat backwards and blow the whiting actually out of the water and catch them with a net. You don't actually have to do that. Just drive up to it, tap reverse just once so you get the momentum going backwards. Naturally, especially in tidal water, you're naturally going to drift back with that tidal movement, and that will be enough. If you start reversing and doing all that nonsense, you're actually going to affect the fishing behind you, because if you start revving the engine and you're in 4 or 5 meters of water, and it's just not going to do you any favors. So it's about positioning your boat right in front of the sand hole, tap reverse, fall back nicely, and you'll get yourself some good whiting.
Next question is from Gav. G'day, boys. How often do you take your reels to be serviced by professionals, or do you do it yourselves?
No, I can't answer that one. I don't think I've ever had a reel serviced.
Gav, I have had a reel serviced. And for me, it's probably every few years. And it's simply for the fact that I've got plenty of rods, but I don't always use them. And that probably is a bit counterintuitive to how you should actually use your gear more often, because then you'll have less sort of corrosion buildup, salt buildup, because you're constantly spinning the gearing. If it just sits in your shed for 12 months, then you can bet on that it will lock up at some point. Now, you can service them yourself to an extent, and whether that's a little bit of greasing or it's WD-40, but when you're dealing with sales and anything worth sort of 500 and above, then I think it's worth sending it in to the professional, send it into Shimano. They'll do it properly. They'll test it out and they'll send it back. And it's something that if you're going to spend $1,000 on a reel, you want it to last a lifetime.
Can I give an early Reds tip, please? Just a quick one.
Go.
Don't wash your reels. It washes the luck off them.
Do not listen.
Blood stains in it, those pili scales, the tuna blood. It's luck, Pat. That's why I don't wash my boat either.
And that's why we're wrapping up this segment. That is the Social Club. We take your questions from social media each and every week. Make sure you send them into our Real Adventures socials, and we'll do our best to get to each and every one of your questions. You're listening to Real Adventures.
Gearing up for Dometic. Dometic Patrol, an icebox with a sense of adventure. Everything you need for adventures, big or small. Mobile living made easy. Dometic.
It's time for gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic. Our special guest this morning is the host of Fishing Edge, Lee Rayner. Good morning, Leroy.
Morning, boys. How are you going?
We're going well. Not quite as good as you because you've been on the water, and we're keen this morning to talk about your new toy. It's a highly modified Staser 481 Crossfire. Talk us through it because it looks unbelievably beautiful.
I'm actually surprised this thing floats with the amount of stuff on it. Sorry to pull you up, Lee. This is a pretty well equipped boat. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it is. It is, and look, it's my second boat because I've got the big boat. We love our big boats, guys. But the reality is, the small boat means you fish more because it's easier and you're not dictated by weather. If it's blowing 20 knots, 30 knots, I can just go trout fishing now or do whatever. So, but on the weight thing, Aaron, when I got them, I'm like, that's cool. I'll just wheel it down the driveway and I'll be able to push it around and shove it next to the big boat. Houston, we have a problem. It doesn't push around that easily because it's got a lot of stuff in it. And I've gone dual axle because this boat's doing a lot of miles, and it just tows better with a dual axle. So then they're not as easy to push around. Let's put it that way.
I was keen to ask you about that because on your socials on Instagram, you were talking about the reason you went for the dual axle trailer because whilst it's not a huge boat, it's not a small boat either. It's that middle range, sort of 16 foot. Talk us through that reasoning and why it is easier to trailer with the dual axles.
Well, it just balances out better. It tows better down bumpy roads and all that. But the other one, Pat, is, as you know, we often go fishing at stupid hours, especially if your name's Aaron. But, you know, you're quite often on a back road or you're heading up the coast at some dumb hour. If something goes wrong, if I blow a tire or I do a bearing, I can literally strap it up, take that wheel off, strap it up and keep going till I can pull over or get to the next town and fix it properly. So it gives you that added benefit as well. But for towing, it's unbelievable.
The other thing that you've got on it, and I'm very envious of, because I got it wrong with my small Staby craft, with the weight distribution for electric trolling motors. We put ours far too far up the boat, and it really meant that unless I'm fishing in closed waterways, it's impossible to use. But the lithium batteries that you're rolling, or battery that you're rolling with this 80-pound motor guide combined with the charger, talk us through the technology behind that, because in the last 5 years, the last 2 years, the technology improvements for electric trolling motors have been substantial.
Oh, it's ridiculous, and I can't believe it myself. So I've gone to a lithium battery, as you said. The bonus is straight away it's a 24-volt battery, so I've got one battery instead of two. The battery weighs 23 kilos. So it weighs
instead of about 30 each. I reckon I had 30 each.
Yep,
that's unbelievable.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a 100-amp-hour battery. Right. So I've fished for 5 days chasing flathead through Gippsland, and I used 48% of the battery. So you get more life out of your battery. You've saved on weight. You can flatten them to dead flat 1,000 times and it doesn't wreck the battery. And then best of all, Pat, when I put it on charge, from 48% to full was 3 hours.
The other thing that the motor guide has with your Simrad sounders is that they all talk to each other. So everything interlinks. You can spot lock. It's phenomenal technology when everything talks to each other.
It's crazy. And I've actually been working out more of the finer details of what you can do with it. Like, you can plot trails and save trails on the electric. So if I say work a bank for flathead and I've gone, that was a really good drift, or if I was doing whatever, I can save that trail, and then the electric will go back and run exactly the same trail. And I'm not changing depth. I'm on the same line.
You're not running an anchor on that boat, are you?
Yeah, I've got a Lone Star anchor on the front, like full drum winch, which we mounted under the deck. You can't even see it, comes out through a hawse pipe. And yes, you do still use your anchor, but with this big electric and the right battery, a lot of the time now, mate, I'm not anchoring. And when you use the GPS feature on your electric, the boat doesn't yaw and the nose of the boat doesn't move out of about a meter square area. So you get all these benefits to it as well. So it's a real game changer.
Well, that was going to be my question to you, was asking about your anchoring situation. Now, Pat and I often discuss, do we put a motor guide or whatever, electric motor on the front of our boat? And I think it's something I'm definitely going to look at. Now, sword fishing, Lee, how many more fish do you reckon it would help you catch when you're trying to sit on a spot for a sword fish instead of having to back up, having one of these motor guides in front?
100, it would be unfathomable. And the other one is, too, you get these weird drifts off Gippsland. Like one drift, you might go north to south. You go back to do the same drift again, and you'll go east to west. Whereas on the electric, I can just slowly drag the boat where I want it to go a lot easier than with a big motor.
Now, the other thing that you're rolling, Lee, you're rolling twin 12-inch Simrads. I want you to talk us through active target.
Yep. That is, it changes your fishing because you spend your whole day looking at a screen instead of looking at where you're going. And
aren't we supposed to have less screen time? Screen time now?
We are. I may have nearly crashed into a couple of kayakers in Paterson River when I first got it because I was too busy watching my screen. But it's like, do you know the best way to describe it? It's like looking at an ultrasound. That is the best way to – it's a live picture of what's happening. I can watch a 3-inch plastic coming back through the water and see the fish chasing it and then turning away. It's unbelievable. I was using it on squid the other day and I could see my jig coming and then there's these 5 white spots coming along. I'm like, I reckon they're squid. And then you see one literally shoot forward. And then I'm like, oh, I'm on. And then you see this white spot pulsing backwards. It's just, it's live like an ultrasound. That is the best way to describe it.
Coming back to anchoring, one of the things that you've done, I said off the top of the interview that this is a highly modified Crossfire 481. Now you've totally reinforced your anchor well. Reasoning behind that, because your socials on Instagram, Lee Rayner Fishing, there's some cracking videos on there talking through and walking through the whole boat, and you've got one around the anchor well and how reinforced it is, and safe to say it. I feel like the boat could pretty much tow anything from the anchor well.
Oh, it could, mate. And the reality is, the reason I had to get it reinforced is because the anchor winch is so powerful. And for a winch that size on a boat that size, when it takes off, it jolts the boat. If you just punch the button, it jolts the boat that hard because it's got that much torque. So we reinforced basically that bulkhead so that we didn't pull the winch through the front of the boat, I suppose, if everything locked up. So it's just... It pulls the anchor up so fast. It's unbelievable. It's so good.
Take us through the thing at the back of the boat that does... the driving part. What have you got on the back, Lee?
The driving part? You mean the ponies on the back?
The places that allows you okay, to... So, the important bit.
Okay, so I put a 90 CT Merc on it. So the CT being command thrust. And what that is, it's a bigger gearbox so you can spin a bigger prop, which gives the boat more torque. Better lift, all that sort of stuff. I'm not about top end speed. I'm about being able to get where I want to go efficiently, you know, with weight in the boat, all that sort of stuff. And that motor does that. On average, it's running about 2.2 kilometers per liter at the moment. So, and that will get better as the motor runs in too. So it's really nice not having to refuel every day. I'm really enjoying that part of it. So
that's because you're using electricity half the time of your day.
Exactly. The other one too, guys, which I did, and I get a lot of questions about it. Most of those boats, when you see them, they're a side console, right? And everyone's like, why'd you go side? And I go, oh, why'd you go center console, which is what I did. Main factor being you center your weight in the boat, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm on my own, the weight is in the center and the boat rides so much better. If I've got two of us in the boat and you've got a big heavy lump like Aaron in the boat, right? If we've got the weather
Aaron's
coming
head, Lee.
Aaron's head, yeah.
Yeah, rest of me is about matching size.
It's like a windbreak. But if we're traveling and the boat's not running quite right, you get the person to step to the other side. So many guys go, oh, yeah, but I've got a side console, so I've got the whole side free to move up and down. And I go, yeah, well, I've got two sides free to move up and down. So it just works better. It really does.
Now, is that a Lee Rayner special, or is that available to anyone when it comes to putting their order in for a Stacer? How do you go about the ordering process behind building a boat like this?
It's a Lee Rayner special, but it's available to everybody. It certainly is available to everyone. I do twin live wells in the back. They come standard with one. I did the big live well in the front for all your other stuff. All that is a standard thing if you want to do it. You go into the, you get your dealer to, you know, the boys at Melbourne Marine to go, right, you want center console, and they put it all into the system, and that's how it gets built. It's actually quite simple.
I'm surprised that you actually didn't have to run a 180 horsepower on that thing, because with the amount of stuff you have on that, and that's the thing, is you can cater to what you actually need for your own fishing. It's not necessarily just like going out and going flathead fishing. You could take that, you could happily take that offshore, chasing a marlin in the right conditions.
100%. I'd love to take it out and catch a sortie out of it this season if the weather allows me. But a classic example, one of the first trips I did in it, we went down the prom chasing kings, White Rock, Seal Island, all that, and we went everywhere. The water was no good. We did, right, we fished it till sort of lunchtime. The boys had had enough. So we raced back in, we ripped the kingy gear out of the boat, we chucked some estuary rods and plastics in the boat, and then we spent the afternoon spinning for flathead and estuary perch. So if we're in the big boat, it would have been, well, this is crap, let's pack
can't
it
and do go it. Home. Yep, yep.
So we did 120 Ks that day in that boat, and we did it easily, and we tried for kings, did no good, and caught flathead and estuary perch. I'll take that any day.
Now, I'm not going to ask what you've spent on the boat, because that'd just be rude to ask what you spent.
It's a lot.
No, but seriously, Stacer can be an entry-level boat to anyone that wants to go out there and buy their first small four-meter boat, or they can do what you've done and complicate things, let's be honest, complicate things and put everything on it. So as a standard entry level, what are we going to buy that Crossfire for as the hull standard, say, from Melbourne Marine, roughly?
You'd probably be looking around the 35 to 40 grand mark.
Yeah, to get you on the water.
Maybe a bit more, but it's, you know, I've gone the bigger motor, and there's so many, you know, there's so much wiring in that boat. I could not believe when the boys were fitting it up. But as a standard boat, and as a standard boat, they're unbelievable. You'd probably more around that 40 mark.
I think the beauty is as well, Lee, you can add things onto it as time goes by. You can add that second Simrad screen. You can add 100%. The MoGuide. You know, you can trick it out over time if you don't want that initial, you know, high upfront cost.
Yep, and you certainly can. And it's even worth, you know, I say to guys, if they're thinking about doing that later, get the boys to run the appropriate wiring or bits and pieces while they're doing the initial fit up, because then when it comes time, it makes it much easier, because then the stuff's there and they just basically do the final bits rather than having to rip everything up and start fresh. So they're just a great starter package as a standard package, but you can do so much with it.
Lee Rayner, host of Fishing Edge. For more information from Fishing Edge, or on Fishing Edge rather, head to www.fishingedge.com.au. Leroy, thanks for your time this morning on Real Adventures.
Thanks for having me, boys. I'll speak to you soon.
Red's Review for Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance.
It's now time for Red's Review for Club Marine, and you've been fishing and gallivanting up and down the Bermagui coastline in a North Bank 750 powered by twin 200 horsepower Mercury outboards. Redman, your review for the week, what you've learned about running twins and whether it's something that you would pursue in your boating library once you upgrade from your 600 North Bank.
What do you mean once? I have. It's this 750 is a beautiful boat, and the two 200 Mercs on the back is that much. They have that much go. Like they seriously are. They've done. Melbourne Marine have put together a really good boat with the team at Mercury, obviously, to get the props right. So it was a lot of work to get your boat right, to tell you the truth, especially with the Optimus steering and everything like that that's gone actually into it. So they've spent a lot of time, and that time, and we spoke about it last week, about propping your boat, getting it done right, is very important for you. And this comes back to the economy that I'm going to give you. So just a couple of numbers. We did a half day the other day, and we did 46 kilometres on the water. This is with the Merc engines, 46 kilometres, and we used 73.9 litres. So we're using an average of 0.62 kilometres to a litre. So sorry, we're going average of 6.2 kilometres to a litre of fuel. So that's pretty good. So a full day we did out of Burmese, we did 61 kilometres. We used 94 litres, and it was pretty much exactly the same as well. Now, that's just cruising, not flogging the boat hard. I'm not sitting at 90 kilometers an hour. That's just your average speed. Now, I actually tried to get a gauge during the week of your average fuel that I was burning when I was traveling. It's impossible. You're on and off the throttle so much, Pat. I wanted to, and I could say to you right now that when I was sitting at, say, 60 kilometers an hour cruising, I was using maybe the burn might have been 74 liters an hour. But like it's, you can't put it on. We're having break. If we're traveling, we did a couple of big days where we traveled 60 kilometers. We traveled from Birmingham all the way to Eden, and we stopped maybe two times, like the boys that go to the toilet, or actually Robbie levitated off the seat at one stage. Don't actually know how. Levitated, come across, took Sam Goodwin out. No one else moved on the boat. We don't know what actually happened, but it's that we obviously had to have a break after that for the half an hour it took Robbie to get up off the floor. So there's a few breaks along the way. So it's hard to give you an exact example of traveling, but to average it out, that is the average there that we're using that I've just given you. Now, 350 liter tank, I said to you straight up, I was like, you should have done 400 or 450. That's well and truly enough. Like it's you, unless you don't have a station in distance, it might be a bit of a pain. But we did a day off Burmese, and then we went to Eden the next day without fueling up and come back. And I worked it out. We come back, we had 45 liters spare in the tank, which is getting a bit probably close. But that was, I did all the maths in my head. Actually, I wrote it down because my head doesn't work very well a lot of time. So we wrote it down and did the math, and we worked it out to the – that's the good thing with the smart gauge, Pat, is you can actually work out to the kilometre with off the days that we had done. We could work out exactly where we needed to be, how much fuel we needed, and it was pretty much absolutely spot on. Like it was damn close. Now, just a review on the boat in itself, in all honest review, this is not a wank factor, we'll call it. This is not seriously blowing North Bank's tyres. Like this – the boat is amazing. It is honestly an amazing boat. There's a few things that I think that we could talk to Rob and change a few things. I reckon we need a wiper in the middle of the boat, Pat, straight up. Wiper in the middle of the boat on the middle windscreen, because there's separate windscreens there, which is a pain. You get water on it. Even with Rain-X, it doesn't quite get enough water off. There's things like the dive doors throwing a fair bit of water in the boat. It really is. I don't know how to stop that, because I know all dive doors do that, some worse than others. Yeah. So I'm not sure what the go is there, but like it's going to be hard to fix. It's a dive door, but you need to have a dive door in a boat, especially of your size.
It's almost a necessary evil, isn't it? Like you're going to get water in, and that's why you have the bilge set up the way that you do, because it's just worth it still.
100%. And there's a couple of things, like I think I said to you, a couple of screws I fell out of the seats where you put Loctite on them. That's the least of your worries, things like that. But as a safety aspect and the boat itself, it doesn't broach. It doesn't throw you sideways. You could literally put your dog in the sea out there and it would nearly drive itself. Like I was running autopilot out there, sitting at 60, 70 kilometers an hour at times, like just cruising, and the boat's not throwing sideways, other than Robbie getting flown off the seat, which not sure how that happened.
You've driven just about every trailer boat there is.
Oh yeah, and I'm not being an idiot here. If I didn't like the boat, I'd tell you straight up. I wouldn't be traveling with the boys out there doing what we're doing if the boat was unsafe. This seriously is an absolute weapon of a boat. The hard top is designed perfect. Gibbsy spent the whole time with a sleeping bag with a beanbag on the roof of the hard top, so the hard top hasn't broke, and that's saying something. So it's. He's a big boy, old Gibber. The whole design that's gone into it, being able to see through the windows. We saw a couple of boats out there that didn't have sliding windows. I'm thinking, man, you must be hot, or you can't see the line when you're on the fish. Everything that's gone into these boats, I'm going to give Rob a call, and hopefully those little tweaks that you and I can help with, and as well as other anglers around like Al McGlashan, who are really testing these boats out. The good thing is with North Bank is they're actually willing to work with us to fix these things, little things, which you, as good as the boat is, that the designer, there's always going to be little tweaks at everything you can make, no matter what it is. And they're really going to listen to us. And like I said, it's not much. It's only a matter of a wiper and a dive door at the moment. So, and I've just put it to the test. So
meter makes a big difference from, 6 meters odd with yours to 7.5. Like this is the maxi size trailable boat, but it makes a big difference when you're on the water for long periods of time.
With that Land Cruiser with the boat, I'm 17 meters long. It's bloody long. Like it's long on the road. So I don't think you need anything bigger than your boat at all. I know you'll probably end up getting a 9 meter if North Bank build it, but it's I seriously think that's about, you don't want much bigger towing. That's on the borderline of getting, it's a big boat. That is seriously a big boat, but it's really, really, really efficient on fuel. That was the main thing that I liked. Those Mercury engines, I said to you, I want to put 250s on it. I don't even think you're allowed, but the max horsepower, but you've gone, nah, 200, you're stuck with your guns, and I'll give you that. It doesn't need any more. It flies and it uses near to no fuel. So the whole kit, to well done to North Bank, Melbourne Marine and Mercury for getting this boat to what it is, because it's an absolute weapon, safe. And yeah, if you can afford it, go buy a 750, because I want one now.
That's Reg's review for Club Marine. And Club Marine actually have on their website reviews of North Bank's 750 in inboard configuration, twin outboard configuration, and also single outboard configuration. So Club Marine for more information.
That was Red's review for Club Marine. Insure your boat or jet ski with Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance. Check the PDS to see if this insurance is right for you.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for Red's tip. Now, he's made a lot of the show about himself today, complaining about coffees. But what do you have for us, Redmond?
Well, I'm about to complain about the fuel prices because I can't get – don't go fishing when it's $2. That's the tip. Don't go away. Stay home. No, the tip this week is when you are going away to a place like Bermuda, and I said it at the start of the show, the one factor to have, and not necessarily organise – you haven't got a group of mates with boats to organise a few boats to go fishing with. When you're at the pub, say g'day to a few blokes or down the boat ramp, get a few of you to work together, because if I look out to my left out there, it's a big bloody ocean. It is huge. Our technology is with charts and satellites trying to work out these fish are and whatnot. Once again, that thing out there is bloody huge. You can only it's so big that it's so much water to cover to be able to find the right things. So if you work together as a team on these marlin, especially, you're just gonna catch more fish and have more fun. And we all have a joke, and you want to catch more fish than the bloke next to you. You always want to do that. That's just part of the nature that we are as fishermen. But if you can get the boys a couple of fish like we have up here as well, we've had multiple people help us. We've helped multiple people. It's been it makes it a hell of a more fun when you're sitting there when everyone's got a video to show of that fish jumping out of the water and everyone's worked together to get the reward to catch those fish. So try and work together as a team with a group of boats and you will catch more fish, Pat.
Beautiful work, Redmond. The flying gaff, well, there's no such thing as a gaff this week. As we head to northern Queensland, we see some of the incredible footage of the floods and the human spirit that we've seen from many Australians, particularly through the Lismore region, where you've got people with tinnies driving up and down main streets and doing their best to transport and in some cases rescue people that have been stranded on the top of buildings. It's great to see that human Aussie spirit, Redmond, and fishing and boating taking a part in that in what has been a bloody difficult week for so many Australians in that northern region of Australia. So from everyone at Real Adventures, that's been listening, we've been watching from afar your efforts and that Aussie spirit that you've shown on little tinnies, whether it be, saving people on rooftops, transporting beer. I saw that the other day, Redmond. I'm not sure they were taking it from a pub to another pub or it was just to a few mates at home, but it's been incredible to see that Aussie spirit on display. And this has been us for Real Adventures. We'll see you next week.